Greetings, sensationalists from across the fruity plains.
You're listening to the Andy Pin Show.
The smooth talk of the town.
Cool. We are back on the Andy Pin Show, and we are going to move on to a little bit of news about President Bush. So, you might find this interesting, but there's a news story out, and I think I'm going to play the news story directly. Bush went on a tour last week, as you might know, of, well, several places around America. But here's the news coverage of it from the Onion News Network.
We now continue our coverage of our top news story this morning, President Bush's tour of America to survey the damage caused by his disastrous presidency.
Right, Tracy, here's what we know so far. The presidency started and hit America at around 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time back on January 20th, 2001. Now, so far, that presidency has caused some $9 trillion worth of debt. It's left thousands of people dead, and still, even this morning, it continues to rage on. We have some footage to show you here of some of the survivors.
Well, I didn't think it was going to be this bad.
Arkansas has never seen nothing like this. This ain't the country. This is the state. It's just mind-boggling.
He needs to see how bad it is down here.
You know, it's so sad. You can actually hear the fear in their voices.
Yeah.
The sheer destructive force of Bush caught people completely off guard in a lot of cases.
Well, joining us now live is Brian Scott. He's been following the president on his tour of the disaster area. Brian?
Tracy, President Bush has been showing real leadership out here. Yesterday, he started the day with a flyover tour of Kansas. Of course, that's one of the 50 states in the direct path of this presidency.
Yeah.
And then he stopped in Denver to deliver a very moving speech that offered as much encouragement as he could to the approximately 300 million people whose lives have been completely torn apart by him.
You really have to admire the strength he's showing in the face of all the adversity he's created.
Bush later met privately with a group of victims and personally assured them his administration would not abandon them as they seek to rebuild their lives in the wake of his administration.
Unbelievable.
We have a clip from that speech, yeah. So we should give a look and a listen to it right now.
I'll be seeing people whose lives were turned upside down. I'll do my very best to comfort them. I ask our nation for those who are prayerful to give a prayer for the victims.
And the president said he has been praying every night that he doesn't do any more damage than he's already wrought on the country.
Have there been any actual relief efforts started for the Bush victims?
From what we understand, some U.S. citizens were able to evacuate safely to Canada and take refuge there before the worst of this presidency hit.
Very good.
There's
point.
Also been a huge outpouring of sympathy from overseas for those millions of Americans who were not able to get out of Bush's path of time.
It's just so upsetting.
Now, you see here in this footage people hoarding food, boarding up their houses.
Yeah.
They've said some of them they're not going to come out until the entire presidency has passed.
Now tell us, what has the president's emotional response been to all this?
Well, Tracy, he cares deeply, no doubt. You can see just by the look on his face, he did truly love America, and to see that he all but destroyed it, I think it's just very hard on him.
Yeah, I have to say, this might be one of his finest moments as president.
You know, I think history may bear you out on that, Tracy.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is The Onion, well-known spoofer online, but they have a news network as well. So a little bit of fun with the Bush administration's record. So let's move on to the campaign and what will follow the Bush administration. We have two choices, of course. It is the McCain administration or the Obama administration. And the coverage often, the day-to-day coverage, goes into so much minutia that it is hard to deal with all the little twists and turns in the campaign without going nuts. So I cover some of them, but I try not to cover a lot of them. Let's go to the highlights. So in the last week, what Barack Obama has done is he's gone out on a tour to reintroduce himself to the country. Of course, McCain did this after he clinched the nomination, but that was more than 3 months ago. He's had a lot more time than Obama has had to campaign, to prepare all of that. And Obama went out, and of course, the first thing he had to establish was that he's a real American. It's really pretty amazing, the rumors that are out there about Obama. Of course, he's black, first of all, half black, and that makes people suspicious. And he's left of center, and that makes some people suspicious, particularly on the far right. But they started all these rumors about him being a Muslim, about having been raised in a madrasa. We already covered a lot of this. So he went out and went into some red states. He's planning to contest the election in states that Democrats don't typically win. Now, that doesn't mean he'll have enough votes to win some of those states. He was in Montana. He was in Kentucky. I think he might have been in North Dakota this week. But it does mean that if he doesn't ignore those states, Democrats, he may do better, and then the Democrats down the ticket may do better. So it's a smart strategy, and he went into traditionally Republican areas and gave speeches last week. He spoke about patriotism in one speech in particular. He spoke about values, spent the 4th of July in a parade and a picnic in Montana. When he spoke about patriotism, he basically said that love of country should be a given for everybody. He said that he's not going to impugn the patriotism of anyone in this campaign, and he will fight back when anyone impugns his. One of the things I like about Obama is that he is a bit of a fighter. And he also gave a speech in which he called for national service. So last Wednesday, he talked about serving the country. And so in a variety of ways, Obama is out there reintroducing himself. Oh, he gave another speech on Saturday after the 4th of July and talked about his faith. Now, he had given a general speech on religion a few months ago after the Reverend Wright stuff hit the fan, but he was in St. Louis on Saturday, July 5th, and gave a speech at a Methodist Episcopal church, an African Methodist Episcopal church, and he talked about his own personal spiritual journey and how he found Jesus and has basically used his faith to solidify his values and to direct his life. So he talks more directly about religion and faith than John McCain does. And it'll be interesting to see what difference that makes with the country. So that's where Obama's been the last week or so. McCain, well, I guess the biggest news out of his camp this week is that he fired his campaign manager and started with a new one. Both these folks are still, the previous campaign manager is still affiliated with the campaign, just in a different role, handling fundraising. But the new guy, who's advised him in the past, is handling the day-to-day stuff. The complaints have been that McCain's day-to-day stuff haven't been very focused, that he jumps from one theme to another, that he's personally out there attacking Obama, which doesn't look particularly presidential. You know, you can have a surrogate do the attack. Traditionally, that's what a vice president is for. Of course, they don't have vice presidential candidates yet. But I understand Dick Cheney's not doing much these days. Maybe he could go out and go on the attack. Anyway, McCain has been trying to establish some of his credentials. He has been trying to improve his foreign policy credentials, of which people argue he has plenty already, but he's been going on trips outside the country, including one to South America. He went to Colombia, talked about the war on drugs and our support there. He just happened to be there as the raid was successful, the trick that got hostages freed down there, that some of whom had been held for up to 6 years by the terrorist rebels down there. So McCain had a fairly interesting week. I think the biggest thing that's going on with McCain and with Obama is, well, there's one more thing to talk about before we get on to this two issues again, and that is an interesting thing that came out of the McCain campaign I'm sorry. An interesting thing that came out of the Obama campaign today, McCain was in Denver giving a speech, I believe, and Obama and his campaign made an announcement that he will speak in Denver in the football arena there out there, the football stadium out there that seats 77,000. He will give his acceptance speech at the end of the Democratic convention there. Now, the Democratic convention is being held in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, Minnesota, or maybe it's St. Paul. And usually there's a four-day convention, and the convention, the climax of the convention on the fourth night is the nominee giving their acceptance speech in front of the 20,000 people who are the delegates and everybody who's there. And Obama is doing, pulling a page out of John F. Kennedy's approach. In 1960, Kennedy went to the L.A. Coliseum and spoke in an open-air venue. Now, they didn't fill the Coliseum in 1960, but he went to a stadium to do it. And that's a bold move. Because, you know, there's a general rule in politics that you are supposed to always have a full crowd. It's one of the reasons why they hold campaign events in small, narrow venues. They don't really care if everybody who comes to see the candidate gets to see the candidate. Their goal is, when it gets put on TV that night, that the pictures show people hanging from the rafters, show all the seats filled, rather than have twice as many people there, but show a bunch of empty seats in the back. Looks like you weren't that successful, and that's a bad message to send out. So that's what they do with campaign events. So Obama has already filled arenas. He has already filled stadiums, and that's pretty impressive. So instead of giving his acceptance speech on the fourth night of the convention at the end of August in Minneapolis, he's going to fly to Denver and give it. So a couple of things here. One is that Minnesota is probably already in the Democratic category for their electoral votes. It'd be pretty hard for a Republican to win in Minnesota. But the other piece here, I'm wrong about this. I'm totally wrong about this. It's the Republicans that are going to Minneapolis or to St. Paul for their convention, and the knock is that they've chosen a place, a state with that they probably can't win. It's the Democrats are holding their complete convention in Denver, but Obama's going on the final night, not to the indoor 20,000-seat basketball arena where they will hold the convention. He's going to the outdoor football arena that seats 77,000 and giving his speech there. So the delegates will all get in. The 20,000 that normally would see this speech will all get in. But there'll be another 57,000 people there, they hope, from around Colorado and elsewhere, there to hear Obama's message and cheering, he hopes. So I can't believe I forgot that or thought they'd move to another city. It just makes total sense it would take place completely in Denver. But the rationale for this is this. One of the reasons the Democrats are holding this in Denver is they actually think they have a chance to take Colorado. Now, Colorado's been a pretty red state, Republican state, until very recently. They have elected a couple Democrats recently, and it's now considered a purple state. There's a chance that Obama could carry Colorado in the fall. That would drive my brother-in-law Gary crazy, but that alone might be worth it.
Hi, I'm Andy Finn. You know, even if someone handed me $1 million this morning, I'd still be doing my radio show on WEBR. Why? Because I have commitment. I have dedication. Plus, I signed a contract. Now, if you'll do the same, I'll have one more dedicated listener. Don't worry, you can void your contract if I ever get obsessed with liberals or gays, the flag, the pledge, embryonic stem cells, the UN, illegal immigrants, missing white women, or the country of France. So So tune in the Andy Finn Show on WEBR, Mondays from 11 to midnight. Hey, if you had $1 million, you could buy a radio station.
We are back on the Andy Finn Show on WEBR Radio, and we're talking about the campaign. So one of the interesting things that has come out in just the last few days is differences between McCain and Obama on Iraq. Well, both sides are accusing the other side of flip-flopping, but the truth is that they're both moving back towards the middle. So let's start with McCain. McCain made the unfortunate statement that I suspect he regrets now, when somebody said, you said before we could be in Iraq for 50 years, and he said, maybe 100. McCain's point was that if we get to the point where soldiers aren't dying, it could be like Germany or Korea. I mean, the American people wouldn't care how many years we kept troops there. That was his analogy. Okay. Why I think that's a poor analogy is that Korea and Germany, or Japan and Germany, they don't mind that we have troops there. I mean, there's a little bit of an irritation at times, but it doesn't rub their wounds raw the way having troops in the Muslim world would. This goes back 1,000 years to the Crusades and the battles that have gone back and forth between the Europeans primarily and the Middle Eastern peoples. But so I think McCain's fundamentally missing the point here, is that the Democrats' point is that we should be getting out of there as soon as we can because we're just upsetting people. And you shouldn't base your foreign policy on, oh, we can't afford to upset people. But it isn't necessary for us to be there to accomplish a lot of the goals we want to accomplish in the world, like winning the war on terror. Okay? We don't need to have 150,000 troops in Iraq to win the war on terror. We need to go after the people that attacked us and that continue to want to do us harm. The other piece about McCain's position, so what McCain is now saying is that he wants to get the troops out expeditiously as well. He doesn't want to stay there 100 years. So the left likes to say that he's flip-flopped. He hasn't really flip-flopped. He just is more articulate now about his point of view. But he doesn't have a problem staying there, and he does talk in terms of winning and losing. He believes the war is winnable. That's probably the biggest difference between Republicans and Democrats, is Republicans think Vietnam was winnable. They think this is winnable. Obama is accused of flip-flopping because what he said very definitely during the campaign was, I will take 16 months to get out. We'll take a brigade out a month, and we should be able to be home within 16 months. Well, then he got asked about leaving a residual force, and in the debates, going back months here, he said, yes, we would, of course, leave some kind of residual force to fight terrorism. Don't know how big. I'd need more information once I get in there, etc. Well, he gave a news conference last weekend, I think it was Friday the 4th, and he ended up giving two news conferences in the day. I guess maybe it was Saturday, actually. But in the first one, he stated his plans for Iraq, and he said that he would consult with the generals, listen to them, find out the situation on the ground, and then make his decision, but that he intended to, you know, start pulling troops out. Well, everybody painted this as a flip-flop and said, oh, he's changing his position. He's not committed to immediate withdrawal. Well, two things. One, McCain was never committed to immediate... I'm sorry, Obama was never committed to immediate withdrawal. He always intended to be as careful getting out as we were careless getting in, as he's fond of saying. But also, he was going to do it over a period of 16 months. So he came out with a second news conference and a second speech in which he said, perhaps I wasn't clear enough earlier. I will sit down with the generals the first day of my administration, and I will give them a new mission. And I will say, instead of trying to stay here in Iraq and solve the problems, our primary mission is to get out but do it carefully. So he figures that all other things being equal, and depending what else he learns on the ground, he will use the 16 months of his first 16 months of administration to pull most American combat troops out. And a lot of people argue that the Iraqis will be on their best behavior, and so they will see it coming with an Obama presidency, and they will actually step up and fill the vacuum that we'll leave behind when our troops pull out. Now, the danger here, of course, is that we could have a bloodbath anyway. That is, it's always been likely that there's going to be a fight over the oil money. That's what people fight about, is resources and money. No matter when we left, if Bush had pulled out in 2003, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, if he did what he's clearly doing, which is, I'm not willing to pull out because I don't want to be blamed when this war is lost, so it'll be the next guy has to do it. So the next president, whether it's a Republican or Democrat, will reduce troop strength. The country can't support this indefinitely. Politically, there isn't the support for it. Bush is going against the currents as it is. And then logistically and militarily, we do not have the troops to continue these deployment after deployment. We're wearing out our troops. It's true that they are volunteers. It's true that they want to do the right thing, support the country, all of that. The bottom line is we're asking them to do an awful lot. So Bush has decided, I think, and I've said this before, that this war will not be lost on his watch. So when historians look back, they can say, well, Bush kept the troops in there and kept things relatively stable. Of course, the danger is whenever we pull out, there'll be a bloodbath. There will be a fight over the money, over the oil. And that may be inevitable. I've always believed that it is. Because the difficulty here, and we've talked about this before on the show, is that certain societies are not sufficiently developed to be ready for democracy. It's not simply a matter of, oh, all people love freedom, so they'll want to embrace democracy. You need a certain level of societal maturity to deal with that. And there are cases where it just can't be done. So we'll find out if Iraq is one of those cases or not. But right now, John McCain is talking in terms of the rhetoric of winning, that we must win this war, that is, subvert all our enemies and then leave a peaceful society behind. Obama's saying we got to pull out, and he's thinking, I think, what I'm thinking, which is whenever we leave, there's likely to be a bloodbath, so it doesn't really matter when we leave. But the sooner we leave, the fewer Americans die, the fewer advertising posters there are for Al-Qaeda showing Americans in the Middle East. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. But Republicans are trying to paint Obama in a corner right now. They're trying to do one of two things, and this is tricky for Obama. First of all, they want to make the claim that he is inflexible, that he's going to leave within 16 months, regardless of conditions on the ground, regardless of the success of the surge, etc. Obama says, no, I'm going to listen to my generals. I'm going to take in that information. And then they say, oh, so you flip-flopped. So they either want to paint him as somebody who's not resolute, who's flip-flopped, or if he sticks with his position and is resolute, that he is inflexible. And that's the tightrope that Obama's got to walk. Now, the flip-flop has been used successfully against the last two Democratic presidential hopefuls. Both Kerry and Gore were accused of flip-flopping. Well, if you think about it, it's interesting that that's how they put it together. And I think what it comes down to is that Democrats are more nuanced in their approach to a lot of issues. Things are a little more subtle, a little less black and white. And so it's easier to point the finger and say, oh, that's flip-flopping, that's flip-flopping. But in fact, the reason that may not fly this time is that, A, they trot it out every time, and so it shouldn't necessarily work every time. But also, McCain is now guilty of flip-flopping on a variety of issues, from campaign finance reform to the immigration reform to his position on Iraq, to his position on the Bush tax cuts. So with all of that in mind, it may be harder to paint Obama as a flip-flopper. Of course, that isn't going to stop him from doing that. So we'll see as this unfolds, but it's going to turn out that Iraq's not the major issue anyway. Unless there's another terrorist attack and the war on terror and Iraq become the biggest issues again and come back to the fore, we're going to see the economy be the main issue. And what's interesting, of course, is that the two people running now never made economy the economy the main issue. That was really Mitt Romney's bailiwick and Hillary Clinton's issue. So they must be sitting back thinking, boy, if this timing had come different and the price of gas went up while we were in the middle of the primaries, I might have won. In the meantime, they're sitting on the sidelines, and the battle of the economy will be won by either Obama or McCain. So we'll see. In any case, that brings us to the end of another edition of the Andy Finn Show. I'll be back next week. Actually, I'm going to take a week off, so I'll be back in 2 weeks. I'm going to be on vacation next week on the 14th of July, so I'll be back on the 21st. But you can read my blog writings and listen to previous shows at andyfinn.us. That's andyfinn.us. And remember, do it. Don't doubt it.